ask anybody's question but yours. You're an idiot. And really a disloyal person.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Disloyal Idiots podcast here on the Fans First Sports Network. And finally, that intro soundbite actually means something because we are actually in the season which said soundbite takes place in. Disloyal Idiots, that means basketball season is starting. Don't ask what happened on Friday.
No, nothing at all happened on Friday. Anyone who's listening to this, if you want the pitchforks out, if you want to hear crazy rants and whatever, we're not going to do that today because hoop starts on Monday, and I think the catharsis of talking about that may help all of our collective thoughts on what happened on Friday and where the fallout is. We'll talk more football when Pregler gets back. We will talk Syracuse moving on to the ACC semifinals in soccer later in the pod. But since we have Noon's royalty with us when it comes to the basketball side of things this week, we're going to talk hoops with Mr. James Zuba. So welcome to the pod, James.
Good to be aboard with you guys. I didn't know Sean Keeley was going to be here. No, good to be with you. Yeah, we got Fiasco out on the football field, but for most Syracuse fans, I think the attention shifts, if it hasn't already, toward the basketball season. And turns out there's much intrigue with the program this year, so I'm sure we'll get into that.
It's been a while since we've had one of those Syracuse football seasons where is it basketball season yet comes up? Because it feels like there's actually been some interest in Syracuse football over like the past couple of years of, oh, how far can this team actually make it before basketball rolls around? And maybe that's also just a factor of Boeheim being in his waning years and not really producing a great team to put out on the court. But now there's no more Jim Boeheim. There's a lot of new faces on this Syracuse team. And this is, I think, from what we've all written about and what it just looks like, this is the first step of a modern Syracuse basketball look, which is awesome to say and probably for the olds a little weird to say.
Yeah, it starts at the top. I think when you use the term modern, right, it starts with the new head coach. And obviously, you know, Jim is no longer here after 47 years, still here, just in a different role, but no longer coaching, which is strange. But yeah, Adrian Autry, you know, if you follow closely, you know, he's going to play man-to-man. He's said it at media day. He's not shy about that. He's bringing the offense along. He wants to play with depth. He wants to play more than seven guys. I'm sure the pace will pick up as well, as we've heard about. So, on both ends of the floor, really playing with depth, changing the defense around, and looking to use more guys along the bench. And he has the talent this year to do it. So a lot of changes for Syracuse. We'll still see the 2-3 zone. We saw it a little bit in the exhibitions, but there's a lot of changes, and Adrian's really looking to bring the program forward.
And as you already alluded to, the defense is already going to be like the, you know, star of what the early season talking points are going to be about. And I feel like it's mixed reviews at best, at least in the preseason, mainly because of second half efforts and 3-point defense, which is not necessarily something you want to be worried about. But again, it's preseason, and who knows if that carries over into the actual games.
Yeah, so we've looked into, you know, like the defense. It seems like a lot of people are reading into it. I don't know how much I'm willing to place on these first two games. Obviously, Syracuse is still working on their stuff. Still looking to get familiarity, getting back on the court. Judah Mintz didn't play in the first exhibition. And you take into account all these things, but Christian, you bring up a good point. I think early in the second half for both of those games, Syracuse kind of took their foot off the gas and looked a little lackadaisical, especially defensively. I don't know if that's a byproduct of playing with a large lead, or maybe it does signify that the defense will, you know, have its problems this year, and certainly on the glass as well. You know, Syracuse didn't rebound that well in either of those first two exhibition games, so. Definitely something to monitor. I don't know that I'm going to take away too many definitive conclusions after these two games. But, yeah, definitely something to monitor, especially just given where the zone has been in recent years and all of its failings and foibles we've all been well too familiar with over the last few years.
Yeah, and that's kind of something we've I guess if you're following on our sister site, noonsmagician.com, the basketball staff did their roundtable, their annual preseason. Everybody puts the superlatives out for who's going to do what. And it really seemed like the consensus was, we're not going to know anything about this team until that Tennessee game. Because it's you've got what, New Hampshire, Canisius, and
Colgate.
Yep, oh boy, there you go.
We might find out something during that Colgate game.
Oh god, it's, you know what's sad is that Colgate has become a game to circle on the schedule these past couple of years. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. But yeah, I mean, what do you think we're gonna get anything definitive before that Tennessee game? Like I believe Colgate's down from their ridiculousness slightly.
Yeah, I think the first two games will just be kind of see what you get. Syracuse should be able to win both of those games just given the competition level. I know Colgate's got a few guys back. I don't know that they'll be what they were last season, but obviously they still have Matt Langille as the head coach, so that brings its concerns. The only thing I think we might be able to look at in that game is just how much of those losses was it on the 2-3 zone versus, you know, Colgate's really good. TBD on that. But, yeah, certainly I don't know that we'll know too much before Maui, because I think that first game against Tennessee is going to be really interesting. I don't know if you guys saw, but Tennessee actually beat Michigan State at Michigan State in that first exhibition game for charity. But I think that'll be a really good test, a really good measuring stick for Syracuse, especially if Sakai Ziegler is playing and he's matched up with Judah Mintz. I'm really looking forward to that matchup.
And that was Tennessee without two of its better players, also, if I'm correct, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I don't think Ziegler played in that game.
Now, the question is, if we play Michigan State, do we immediately bust the zone back out? Just for posterity's sake.
You might have to if it's a Tom Izzo coach team. You might have to. Maybe Izzo would sit as star freshman.
Anybody who is named Tom apparently doesn't know how to coach against the zone between him and Crean, so we should be okay there.
Unfortunately, there are no Toms in the ACC, so we can't take advantage of that in the ACC schedule. Well, when you look at roster construction, the transfer names are going to be flashy because of the talent that was brought in, but all this really points to, okay, this team and offense just in general is going to run through one guy, and it's Judah Mintz. And yes, I know he didn't play in the first preseason game, but he still looked like he still had, the same elements of his game in that set of preseason game. Where do you think he's made the biggest jump, at least just in the limited sample size we've seen?
Yeah, talking with him at Media Day, it's interesting. I think a lot of us want to focus on the three-point shooting. That's kind of the feedback that he got. Also, he's talked about just picking up the intensity on defense. You know, he really wants to shine in that capacity as well this year. The shift to man, I think it'll benefit him. As I generally think about zone versus man, it's usually, the zone might benefit a guard who maybe isn't as quick on his feet, but can kind of anticipate and play smart and get in those passing lanes and, anticipate passes. But I think the switch to man will benefit Judah too. He was tops in the league in steals as a freshman. So I'm really looking for that. Yeah, obviously everybody wants to see the development of the three-point shot. How does he shoot it this year? But on the other side of the ball too, that really interests me.
And how is this going to work with JJ Starling? Because yes, again, both guards coming in as, flashy top 100 recruits. Starling obviously choosing Notre Dame in his first year before returning back home to Syracuse to play with Autry. But when you look at it from just a, skill set perspective, it seems like both of them are pretty similar and almost identical in terms of how they play. So how is this dynamic going to work between the two guards?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I think there are two different types of guards where you have Judah, who's really quick. Is kind of more of a slender guard. JJ's really physical. Like getting up, next to him at Media Day and just seeing how much he's developed physically. I think he'll be able to do some things with that in terms of, getting in the paint a little bit and finishing that sort of thing. Judah's just going to beat you with quickness, But in terms of perimeter play, they kind of do the same thing. So that's going to be the interesting thing. You know, I think Judah will be the lead guard and JJ will play off ball. But it might come down to, you know, just a given matchup too. You know, using Tennessee as an example, you know, Zakai Ziegler is a great defender. If he's guarding Judah Mintz, well, maybe that means that that's going to be the JJ Starling game and vice versa. So I think both of them, you know, the shooting is really going to be the thing this year that could maybe define how well they do or maybe their ceiling. But in terms of stylistically play style, I think they both kind of do the same thing. So that's kind of where, you know, the wings of Chris Bell and Justin Taylor come into play, and they're kind of importance as well.
We might as well touch on those two guys because I feel like the same way. I think this season is going to come down to whether Bell and Taylor can turn it on. Is there a world where we see both of them on the floor at the same time in long stretches, or is it just going to be in and out, one for one like?
Well, we saw that last week with Benny Williams out, and they obviously both started. But yeah, to your point, Christian, I mean, those guys kind of both bring the same thing too. You know, Justin Taylor did get 12 rebounds in that second exhibition game. That would really be huge for him and Syracuse if he could do that. If he could bring something just a little bit more than that shooting ability. But it's a skill set on this team that those two guys are clearly the best at. I don't know that you get quite the same shooting level with maybe a Quadir Copeland or even a Kyle Cuff off the bench. But I don't know how much they're going to play together just because they do the same thing. Especially if you have Benny Williams back and, you know, you want to kind of play big. I don't know that you're going to have both of them on the court at the same time for long stretches.
Yeah, I was going to say the only time like my brain goes to that is if you want to space that floor and allow JJ and Mintz to both be able to kind of do their thing. So matchup dependent, you know, however they're or whatever they're seeing on defense type thing.
Yeah, I think it is matchup dependent. You know, maybe if a team plays zone two, or maybe if you want to move like Malik Brown to the center and kind of play a little bit small and try to get up and down and, you know, space the floor with shooters. But yeah, it's a good point, Steve.
I made a good basketball point. Yay.
Let's touch a little bit more on this gauntlet of a schedule that Syracuse has, especially the absolutely powerhouse of a non-conference schedule that almost feels like it's an SEC non-conference football type of schedule, because it all centers around the MLE Invitational Tournament. It's tough to see if Syracuse has a chance in Hawaii based on just the power, the strength of the teams that are there. But given what we've seen from the preseason games, how much confidence do you have that Syracuse can actually at least make some of these games close and not get outright embarrassed?
Yeah, I think they can compete. The first game against Tennessee, that's going to be really tough. But in the second game, you know, win or lose, you're either going to get Purdue or Gonzaga. I don't know Purdue.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I don't know how much Purdue will hurt them from the perimeter, but certainly they have Zach Edey in the middle, so that would be a potentially really interesting matchup with Naheem McLeod and how Syracuse would choose to combat that. Maybe they would try to play small, maybe they wouldn't. Or Gonzaga, you know, I don't know that Gonzaga is quite the world beater that they were maybe even two or three seasons ago. But yeah, I think Syracuse can compete. The young guys are really going to have to step up. If anything, in a tournament like that, if Syracuse is going to play with depth, you know, maybe that does kind of benefit you on a short turnaround, second or third day, where you're not reeling as maybe as some of the other teams when you're playing back-to-back-to-back days.
And when you take a look at some of the other games on the schedule, you have LSU and Georgetown, obviously, the good old Georgetown-Syracuse rivalry, and then Oregon. Those LSU and Oregon games are going to be interesting, mainly because those seem like two teams where it's a good barometer test for Syracuse as well, because it's not the same level as some of the programs that are at Maui, but it feels like two programs that could be close to the same level at Syracuse right now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, looking at that schedule, like, I think depending on what happens in Maui, Syracuse might have to win two out of three of those games. Obviously, the LSU game's at home. Maybe it doesn't help your metrics as well as a neutral site against Oregon or even the game against Georgetown at Georgetown. But, yeah, you know, when you look at both those teams, Oregon and LSU were both in the 40s in KenPom, and Georgetown, is 159 from where they were last season. I think they'll be much better than that. Ed Cooley's in there. They've gotten a little bit more talent in there, so I think they'll be much better than that, as will Syracuse. Syracuse is 105 in KenPom to start the season. But, yeah, those games should be a little bit more competitive and around Syracuse's level in the non-conference as opposed to the Maui Invitational.
Syracuse-Georgetown, that's going to be quite the different look this year with nobody familiar on any bench. I mean, yes, Ed Cooley from when he was at Providence, but beyond that, like, what is it going to, is it going to feel the same? Is it going to be Syracuse Georgetown, or I guess to be determined
at this point? It'll be Lemoyne Georgetown. That's the new rivalry.
Yeah. That, you know, with the big move, maybe Lemoyne turns into their Colgate.
It could be.
Just something about Syracuse Georgetown in the Capital One Arena doesn't feel the same as Syracuse Georgetown in the dome, because like Syracuse Georgetown in NBA arena just doesn't bring the same like college hatred rivalry between the two programs as it does in the dome. I think that's one of the big things that has kind of helped cool the opinion on the Syracuse Georgetown rivalry over the years.
Yeah, that's a good point too, and it's a tougher sell on the younger part of the fan base as well, just trying to get them invested and care about something that they didn't live through. But yeah, certainly the on-campus feel. I've been to both. I mean, I've been down to DC, and it does get electric, but you know, the student section does come out for that game, but it is a totally different feel in an NBA arena versus like, you know, the JMA Wireless Dome, where you know, it does feel a little bit more at home, college, campusy, that sort of feel. But yeah, I think we can all agree, like this isn't the rivalry that it once was. The stakes are lower. It doesn't have quite the same level of meaning when you're not in the same conference.
Yeah, between the conference and the lack of gravitas between, you know, Thompson Boeheim or other Thompson Boeheim or any other coach in Boeheim. Yeah, it's definitely down a peg on the for Christian, if you're charting the Steve is old, we're at what, how many minutes?
18 minutes in.
Perfect. Yeah, yeah. We're doing good there.
Well, on in terms of recency, in terms of things that have happened recently, Syracuse and its non-conference schedule in just recent times just hasn't been great in terms of, especially you know, in the last couple of years under Boeheim, especially in 21 and in 22, Syracuse has gotten off to slow starts in non-conference plays. Obviously, the two losses to Colgate, a loss to Cornell in there as well, you know, a loss to Georgetown, and then the pitfalls during the Thanksgiving Invitationals. What does Syracuse need to show? Not just wins, but like, what do they need to show that they can, in order to, you know, give this fan base hope that they have a fighting chance in the ACC this year?
Yeah, I think they're going to have to beat somebody, right? Like, you can't just go in and just try to be competitive in all those types of games, the Maui and the three that we mentioned. They're going to have to win some of those, right? If you lose all of those, then you're going to really be looking toward, you know, the ACC tournament, that type of thinking. But yeah, I think more importantly, like, win a couple of those games and then be competitive. You know, show some growth. I think for Syracuse fans, you probably want to see that the defense can step up and the man-to-man can work. You want to be encouraged there. But, yeah, I think it's just going to come down to you're going to have to win a couple of those games. You're going to have to find a way and then just try to be competitive in every game. And if you can get through that non-conference, you know, that's the Maui and the LSU – Georgetown, and you have a game against Virginia sandwiched in between. By the way, ACC is not really doing Autry any favors with that road game to Virginia mixed in. But yeah, you're going to have to win a couple of those games to where, you know, you can be a little bit above 500 in the ACC and have hope to make the NCAA tournament.
I feel like the ACC is starting to do that every year, just sprinkle in a random game way too early when the teams have no idea what's going on.
Remember 19?
Yeah, when we opened with Virginia?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
in one of the worst games of basketball ever.
That's what we thought when we saw the Wisconsin-Virginia debacle, which was somehow even worse, even more lower scoring than that game.
Oh, my God. The worst game that will forever be ingrained in my memory, and it's not even the Syracuse game. It was in 21-22 when I went to MSG for Syracuse-Nova. And the lead into that game was Tennessee-Texas Tech, and it featured some of the worst basketball I've ever seen in my life.
I remember that game. That was bad. The final 2 minutes, wasn't that a rough stretch of basketball in the final 2 minutes especially?
Yeah. I remember everyone in the MSG crowd audibly booing during those minutes. But there was a play where a player from, I think it was Texas Tech, missed a runaway dunk with no one on him. It was just the epitome of awfulness in that game.
You're supposed to be able to dunk as a Division I college basketball player, last time I checked.
Usually comes in handy.
Yeah, right.
It usually is like one of those like minimum qualifiers as a Division I basketball player, right?
Pretty sure, yeah. One-on-0 fast break, you're supposed to be able to score on that, yeah.
A person who can definitely dunk is Nyheim McLeod, but I'm not sure we're going to see much of him do much of that this year, just mainly because he's definitely not the same offensive player as Jesse Edwards. And we've already seen a bunch of Malik Five at the Brown, as we were promised by John Ronstein in his initial early season practice reporting.
That's right.
I think this rotation at the Five is going to be very, very interesting. How do you see this going? Is McLeod eventually going to get more minutes and play, you know, closer to 20 minutes a game, or are we going to see a majority of Brown at the Five and McLeod gets the Daywon Coleman hook?
You know, you picked a good number, because if you said 25 or more, I would have said no way. For Nyheim, you know, obviously he's a lot different than Jesse Edwards. He's 7'4", as we all know. He's a big guy down there. I worry about if this team does want to play at a faster pace, if he'll be able to kind of continue in log heavy minutes. He wasn't really asked to do that at Florida State, given the style that Leonard Hamilton plays. So I don't know that he'll be able to have the conditioning. I also worry about him being able to guard ball screens. When he's out there at Syracuse, isn't in his zone, teams are going to try to take him away from the rim, just given his size. He's going to have to try to guard on the perimeter, ball screens, that sort of stuff. I don't know if he'll be able to do that as well as Malik Brown will. So I see Malik Brown, you know, playing a lot of time at center this year. You know, Peter Carey obviously got some run. We didn't see Moni Hirima in either of the exhibitions. Dutcher did say that there's nothing health-wise wrong with him. I don't know if I totally buy that. But, it's interesting. I think that, you know, Malik certainly gives you the best option if you want to play up and down, switch ball screens 1 through 5. I think he's probably the most versatile center you can have, just given those attributes.
I don't know. Are we going to, you know, 6'8" center? I mean, it was. Yeah. Are we just going to run small ball and see what happens when we have 3 7-foot options?
I think so. I think, well, it's going to be matchup dependent, you know, like that Purdue game, that would probably be really interesting with Edie in there, just to see how Autry wants to combat, you know, size. Does he try to go size with size? Does he try to go, you know, small ball? But I think in and of itself, I don't know that, you know, Malik Brown's going to get 20 or 25 minutes at the center, but I think if you're playing 3 guys there, or maybe even 4, he's probably going to get more on average than the other guys, just given that.
Right. Good change of pace option and different look and reliable, as opposed to, you know, we've seen Patterson, we've seen Carey so far to a degree. We know, I mean, we saw Hema last year. And I do apologize. There are only 2 7-footers. The Carey and Hema are 6'11".
With, you know, oh, so close.
Yeah. so yeah. It, well, I don't know.
Also, not every 7'4" player can be Victor Wembanyama. Also,
I feel like none other than him can be.
What that dude is doing right now is nuts. Like, I think we all knew he was going to be good, but not this good. At least at the start of the NBA season.
Yeah. We need Nehemia Cloud to develop ball handling skills to be able to just bring it up and do it when he does.
A ball handling skill, step back threes, dunks that start from outside the restricted area.
Blocks that start at 15 feet in the air.
Euro steps that start from the three-point line.
It's all perfectly normal. Perfectly normal for a 7'4" guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't know what you're supposed to do about that.
I don't know either. But it's insane that the Spurs have another generational talent at center. Except this generational talent at center is not a bruiser. It's a literally, I will do everything at basketball really, really well.
Well, James, you're not in the Steve is old category, but you're old enough to remember like Dirk Nowitzki when he was coming through, how revolutionary it was for, like, you know, Arvydas Sabonis took a couple of threes. Whereas Nowitzki was like, oh, you can play on the perimeter at that height. And this is just a whole different level.
The idea that a four man with a jump shot was kind of like revolutionary at that time is just kind of mind blowing when you consider guys like Wemby and you know, Jokic and all these stepping out and hitting threes. It's kind of wild to think that what Dirk Nowitzki was doing in the late 2000s was considered revolutionary.
Right. Yeah. That was like, oh my God, I've never seen this before.
Yeah. You consider how Karl Anthony Towns and Brooke Lopez have adapted their games to be perimeter players and not just big guys underneath the baskets, which is how they started their careers. But Syracuse doesn't have that type of player. All their fours and fives are going to be underneath the basket. Which also brings up another point that I want to kind of explore with Malik Brown, because what we saw from Brown a lot when he was in the lineup at the five is that Syracuse played a lot of zone with Brown at the five. Is that something that you think stays, or will we see a bit more man if as the season goes on, if they decide to go to the small ball lineup with Brown at the five?
You know, that was interesting. I don't know if that was by design or just by accident where Syracuse was just trying to get a 2-3 zone look and Brown happened to be in there. But yeah, I would think Syracuse would be more inclined to play the zone with Nehemia Cloud for the reasons I just mentioned, or Munir Hima as his backup, for the possessions that Syracuse does go zone, just given those guys' inherent, you know, height and length that is befitting of a Syracuse center in the zone. I would think Syracuse would want to be more inclined to go with those guys. If it's a situation like if you caught during the exhibitions, most, if not all, I'm not sure if it's 100% of the zone positions, were pretty much out of bounds underneath sets where the ball had gone out of bounds and, you know, Damon or St. Rose was passing the ball in from the baseline. Autry was going 2-3 zones in that situation. I don't know that we saw too much zone at the start of the possession. So it could have been a function of the ball had gone out of bounds. But, yeah, I did find that interesting that Brown did play the center in the zone. I don't think he would be the first choice there out of the center.
Yeah. The only thing that popped into my brain was familiarity and, like, McLeod not knowing his ass from a hole in the ground when it came to what they're going to try and teach for the zone. Like, if Autry is going to use something similar to Boeheim's concepts, like, McLeod is going to be the last guy you're going to want in there when Hema and Brown have both had years in the system.
Yeah. And not to conflate McLeod with Will Patterson, but as Will Patterson got in the final 2 minutes of the St. Rose exhibition, Syracuse did go zone and the ball went into the high post and he just wasn't aware of where he was supposed to be. And he got out and contested the jump shot late. But I think that's a byproduct of Syracuse just not practicing zone as much as a Jim Boeheim coach team would have in the practice.
Yeah, that we already saw what happened when you put two newcomers into his own defense. And it was 21-22. And it didn't work out that well.
Well, you know a newcomer that is working out much better than what you're talking about?
A thing that burned a hole in my wallet this morning?
That would be exactly what I'm talking about from Home Field Apparel.
Indeed, Home Field Apparel just released today, this morning, a Syracuse bomber jacket with auto, a blue Syracuse auto bomber jacket with auto on the chest crest. It is beautiful. I have picked one up myself, and you can too if you go to homefieldapparel.com. You can also use the code NUNES23 at checkout. It's NUNES23 at checkout, and you'll get 10% off your order. Pick up that new Syracuse bomber jacket. The Home Field Apparel has bomber jackets for a ton of basketball-related schools coming out in the next coming days as well. I believe Georgetown and Seton Hall were part of the drops that were released today. So go ahead and pick up your Home Field Apparel bomber jacket and any of their other great apparel stuff that they have at homefieldapparel.com. And again, use the code NUNES23, that's NUNES23, at checkout for 10% off your order.
And this is Christian making good on a promise.
Indeed.
Years ago at this point.
At this point, yeah. When Connor first dropped the Indiana bomber jacket, because obviously he was going to, I said, if they ever make a Syracuse one, I'm getting it. And boy, did they drop a Syracuse one. I am definitely getting it. That we love Home Field Apparel. You should go again, homefieldapparel.com. Grab yourself all your retro Syracuse gear.
Including this shirt.
The good old Syracuse 90s logo. James, I don't know, and I think a lot of experts will agree with me on this. I don't know where Syracuse stands in the ACC power rankings. I've seen anywhere as high as 6, 7. I've seen as low as 10. Where is Syracuse, do you think, in this ACC pecking order?
Yeah, a lot of mixed reviews. I'm sure all those experts are tuning in to get the real
off. Indeed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I think CBS had Syracuse as low as 11th. I think the conference Syracuse was picked to finish 10th or 11th. Las Vegas is a lot more bullish on Syracuse than the experts. Las Vegas gives Syracuse the 7th best odds to win the league, which I found interesting. You know, some of that has to do with the ACC, and the middle of the ACC is maybe more close together than it has been in recent years. I don't know that you can realistically look at the teams in the middle of the pack and make too many great arguments to say why one team should be better than the other. With the exception of maybe Clemson and Virginia, 4th and 5th, I think the top three are obvious, but you know, I think Syracuse can compete for, you know, 4th or even 5th in the league. And realistically, they're probably somewhere in the 6 to 9 range. I don't think this team's going to finish 10th or 11th in the league. I think there's too much talent here. You know, even with Chance Westry out indefinitely and, you know, Benny Williams, you know, should rejoin the team soon. All these sort of things that are going on. I just think there's too much talent on the Syracuse roster for them to finish that low. But certainly I get the uncertainty mixed in with a group that's, you know, an ACC conference that's, you know, a little bit closer in terms of talent than maybe it has been in years past.
Let's touch a little bit on those two guys that are been out for quote-unquote reasons. Benny Williams, we know, suspended for a violation of team rules. Who knows if he'll be back. But I want to start with Chance Westry, because I feel like he was a dark horse candidate for grabbing a starting spot at some point this season due to his shooting. And as we've already mentioned, Syracuse really only has two pure shooters on this team, and I feel like Westry could have been the third guy to that mix. How much does it hurt that he's out indefinitely?
It does. This is where the depth helps you, obviously. But for Westry specifically, he was a guy that could do a lot of different things. You know, just going through some of his highlight tapes, you know, I haven't seen him play too much in person other than the Orange Tip-Off event. But you know, he was a guy that can kind of be really good at ball screens. He can get by his guy. I think he's kind of another iteration of like the J.J. Starling, Judah Mintz skill set. But he did have a little bit of a jump shot as well where he can step out and shoot. I just think his versatility and his willingness to really play any position. I was talking to him in media day, and you know, he just said he's willing to play wherever, you know. But I think that's kind of where it hurts you. Where it helps Syracuse is with the depth and kind of having a guy like Quadir Copeland who can maybe do some of those similar things, who's looking for, you know, a bigger role off the bench this year, and having a guy like Kyle Cuff who's looked pretty solid as well. But yeah, certainly losing Chance, it's a big blow. And in terms of the guards and what they have on the perimeter with the wings, he probably has the second or third highest ceiling of all of those guys. I don't know how quickly he would have got there this year, kind of coming off an injury, and he didn't really play at Auburn last year. But I think his upside is huge, just given his frame, his height, and his ability to do multiple different things out there. I think he's got a really high ceiling. So hopefully for Chance, you know, he can get back sooner rather than later. But if I'm a Syracuse fan, I don't expect him back anytime soon.
It's so weird seeing all these names from, you know, recruiting years gone by,
yeah,
actually showing up on the roster. Like, if there was any possibility in my brain that we would see Chance Westry, J.J. Starling, on the roster, like, what? How? How did Red pull this off?
By being Red and not Boeheim?
Effectively.
Getting a little lucky and maintaining good relationships with people is important. And on the other side too, you know, we kind of talked about this a little bit in the news Slack, but you know, what's the likelihood that this happens? Jalil Bethia, you miss out on him and he goes to Miami. You know, maybe if he gets hurt or it doesn't work out at Miami, he remembers the good relationships he built with the Syracuse staff. And, you know, for a lot of these guys, talking with them, Kyle Cuff, Westry, I found it interesting that, you know, a lot of these guys said, I want to be closer to home. Sometimes in a post-pandemic world, those sorts of things matter and having relationships with people. So, you know, in today's world of the transfer portal, you never know. You're not necessarily recruiting guys always for the first go around. You know, sometimes it's about the second time too.
Yeah.
And you never know. Miami's program may go under if Johnny Rees continues to spend billions of dollars on players.
That's a good point. You know, Jim Larrañaga is not getting any younger either. So there's all kinds of factors.
Yeah, there is indeed. Let's talk a little bit about Boney Williams, as I alluded to. Again, violation of team rules. He'll probably be back soon. At least that's the assumption. If he's not back before Maui, something's really gone horribly wrong. But I'm assuming we'll see him back, if not tomorrow, for the opening game against Niagara, at least for probably the Canisius game. Where is Benny's game right now? Because as I alluded to, I don't think a lot of people are expecting the fours or the fives to play perimeter-style modern big man basketball that you see in the NBA. It seems like Benny is, towards the end of last season, started to kind of try and tailor his game to that style, but it's nowhere as near as consistent as I think people would like it to be. Can he become that modern four-man that is so popular in the NBA? Can he be that for Syracuse?
In terms of at Syracuse, yeah, I think he could be that. It's as you mentioned, Christian, it's, you know, kind of the motor and the ability to not take plays off, that sort of thing. Benny Williams has all the talent in the world and all the tools to be a really, really good college basketball player at Syracuse. For him, I just think his confidence and under, you know, a new leadership, a guy that recruited him out of high school in Autry, I think that's going to do wonders for him. And one thing, I kind of wrote an article about it right before Benny was announced that he was suspended for the team. It kind of takes away from the point, but I think it still stands. But Benny Williams has really grown up, and he's really mature in talking with him. And the way that he speaks, he kind of came into Syracuse as a young-looking kid, just a top talent, and he's really grown. And, you know, talking to him at media day, you could really tell. You could tell in the tone of his voice that he's much more confident, much more mature. And he hasn't blamed anybody for expectations that maybe have been placed on him, or for not living up to what maybe people expected, having up and down seasons. He's taking responsibility. He's saying, I never wanted to transfer. I love Syracuse. There's everything I need to be a good player is here. So hearing that stuff is kind of interesting. And I think he's going to have a good year. I don't know that he's going to, you know, put up 16 points and have 10 rebounds a game. But I think if he can come in and, you know, give Syracuse 12 to 14 points and, you know, 6 to 7 rebounds a game, I think he can do that. And then let's see what Benny Williams does maybe his senior year. But he's got all the tools. I think he could be that. And I think he'll be able to showcase his jumper with a little bit more confidence this year too.
So let's dive in a little bit deeper into this ACC schedule. The home games, there's not a lot of big names in terms on the schedule, in terms of home games on the ACC side. I mean, it's Pitt, Boston College, Miami, Florida State, NC State, Louisville, Clemson, UNC, Notre Dame, and Virginia Tech. Other than that UNC game, like, it's not definitely the big names that you expect. At least on the home side. So you would hope that, you know, Syracuse can pick up a couple, you know, quality wins at home against, you know, teams that they haven't, in order to strengthen that NCAA resume and that NET resume.
Yeah, and like looking at the back end of the schedule, we're used to just seeing a gauntlet of a Syracuse schedule kind of like the ACC tournament. It's not. Yeah, it's just decidedly not. That last game at Clemson will be interesting. Clemson figures to be one of the better teams in the ACC with one Joe Girard on the roster. But yeah, Syracuse is going to have to do a lot of its damage early, both in the non-conference and in the ACC as well. Yeah, the Virginia game, obviously early, and then you start off ACC play with Pittsburgh and Duke, and then skipping over a Boston College game. You've got the game in Chapel Hill. Pittsburgh back in the dome, and then you get Miami. So, yeah, Syracuse is going to have to find a way to win some of those games early and then maybe stockpile some wins against the middle tier or the lower tier of the league in February and up until March.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of quality games coming to the dome, is there? There's really no... no place for them to push to have one last record-setting game before they, you know, renovate the seats and
the closest one would have been UNC, and that game's on a Tuesday.
Probably not going to do it.
No,
you've got a lot of ACC Saturday games. If there's one, you'll have Jim Boeheim Day against Notre Dame on February 24th. But Notre Dame
is in the rebuild of rebuilds right now for their program.
They're at the bottom of the bottom. They do not have much talent. You know, don't have anything to add to what anybody doesn't already know about Michael Shrewsbury, but they do not have ACC level talent on that roster this year. Good day for Jim Boeheim to get a win on his day. Syracuse should win for him on that day.
You know, the most Syracuse thing will be us tanking to Notre Dame on that day.
No, it will be like every Notre Dame ever over the past 3 years. Syracuse will go down by double digits, switch to a full court press with 10 minutes left in the second half, and inexplicably win.
No, inexplicably lose by 3.
Inexplicably, Prentice Hub will somehow be eligible for that game.
Indeed.
Yeah, they'll find a way to beat North Carolina at home on Tuesday, and then a week later somehow lose to Notre Dame on Jim Boeheim Day.
The modern Syracuse basketball experience. You know what else is going to define a modern Syracuse basketball experience starting next year? Cal getting back in this alongside Stanford and SMU. I love talking about this because there's so many different opinions around college athletics. And James, we haven't gotten a chance to like really dive into, you know, what you think about the new friends in the ACC. How are you feeling about our new California and Texas friends?
Well, I haven't watched Cal basketball since Alan Crabb was playing on the team when Cal could get right back in this. So it's been almost a decade. And the last time I watched SMU basketball was when they had Shake Milton. So I haven't watched the basketball product of either of them. And that's probably telling for the casual observer of the rest of the sport, where not as relevant. Certainly, you know, like an academic play that fits the model of the conference, I guess, if you want to show for the ACC. But basketball-wise, you know, not a terrible move given the state of where the conference is and, you know, what Clemson and Florida State's interests are. I think the ACC had to do something. Geographically, it doesn't make sense. We know basketball's along for the ride, yada, yada. I don't know that it really excites anybody, but it is a new look for the conference and a move that you had to make. Those aren't huge basketball brands that I think anyone's going to be excited about. I don't think anyone from the Northeast is going to be in a hurry to take a plane, you know, out to Cal or to Texas. So, yeah, it kind of is what it is. Don't feel really strongly either way. I think it's just a move the ACC had to make, and here we are. We're playing the Bears, and yeah, we're going to Texas, I guess.
Because why not?
Like, college athletics, 2023.
It all totally makes sense. They're amateur athletes. It's fine.
Don't worry, the NCAA isn't about to lose. Don't worry, the NCAA isn't about to lose billions of dollars in Supreme Court cases. Don't worry, it's fine.
Yeah,
literally, it's fine. No, I'm joking. But what will also make this interesting, a hidden interesting layer to this, how is the ACC tournament going to work with 18 teams?
Yeah, David Teal, I think, had a really good article on that. I think he was asking about that at ACC Media Day. But more than likely, you're going to have to drop teams, like kind of how the Big East used to do back in the 2000s, where, you know, only the, I think it was the top 12 teams in the Big East did that at that time.
That's right.
Yeah, you're just going to have to do, I think, 16 maybe if you're the ACC, right?
Sounds right. Yeah. I mean, it's been a while since I remember, you know, a 14 or 15 seed getting a win in the ACC tournament. So it's not like you're losing much.
Yeah.
We're going to have play-in games for the play-in games and basically start the ACC tournament the Sunday, finish Sunday. It'll be fine.
Sunday before Selection Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah.
The 17th and 18th team will play in the Tuesday night game.
It's always thrilling to, you know, turn up on the first day of the ACC tournament, and the 8 o'clock game is the 10 versus 15 matchup.
There we go.
Barn burner. Absolute barn burner.
Maybe the bottom three teams just do an annual tournament in Greensboro and do a round robin. Everybody plays each other twice.
So we have an ACC NIT?
Yeah, exactly.
When I was going to say winner of that goes to the NIT, and the two losers have to contractually play in the CBI.
There we go. Well, there's going to be more opportunity for the big boys in the NIT now because, you know,
the regular season champs.
Yeah. Can't have the mid-majors in the NIT anymore. Come on now. Where's the fun in that?
No. Jeez. You have to make – ESPN is paying a lot of money for the NIT. You've got to make that tournament prestigious now.
Exactly.
No, because ESPN is definitely competing with the NCAA for, you know, the all important viewership numbers during March Madness.
Right, you got to fight over those scraps.
Speaking of March Madness, let's, you know, kind of put a bow on Syracuse basketball preview with that. Syracuse hasn't been to March Madness since the bull crap Sweet 16 run. In 21, it's been 2 years. What does Syracuse need to do to get back to the big dance?
When was the last time Syracuse didn't go to the NCAA tournament 3 years in a row? It's been more than 50 years. I know that. They're going to have to find a way to win some of those non-conference games early. In the Maui that we talked about, but you know, it's not unreasonable for this team to get to 18 to 20 wins. I think if you do win a couple of those games early, you know, either in the Maui or you know, Oregon, Georgetown. And then you're over 500 in the league. You find a way to beat you know, Duke, North Carolina, Miami, maybe even a Clemson, Virginia. You have some of those on your resume. You're going to have a good strength of schedule in the non-conference. You should have a respectable net number in that regard and amongst the other metrics that the committee looks at. But yeah, I think if Syracuse can find a way to win some of those games and they're in the 18 to 20 win threshold, that they'll have a chance to be on the bubble and get into the NCAA tournament the first year. I don't think it's totally unreasonable. If you're a Syracuse fan, I think you should push for that and want for that, obviously. But I don't think it's totally far-fetched to think that this team can make the tournament in year one. There's going to be challenges, and there'll be shortcomings, and there'll be tough losses and that sort of stuff, and things to work through with a first-year head coach. But I think they have the talent to get there.
We're used to stupid losses as it is.
All right, actual final question, basketball-wise. James, you were there for media day, you know, the whole, you know, aplomb of new players coming in, new head coach. What's your general take on the feel on the program right now and the atmosphere of the program?
Yeah, it seems a little lighter. I think that has to do with new energy and a new head coach and a guy that these kids want to play for and they were recruited by. A lot of these kids were recruited by Autry when you look at, you know, Judah Mintz, Benny Williams, so on and so forth. J.J. Starling, obviously. I think these guys are just really excited. And, you know, obviously preseason optimism knows no bounds sometimes, but these guys are really focused and determined to get into the tournament. You know, talking to even a guy like Kyle Kupp, who hasn't been a part of this program, was away at Kansas, says, you know, we want to bring Syracuse back to where Syracuse is supposed to be. That was a sentiment shared by everybody, by Benny Williams, J.J. Starling, Judah Mintz especially. Judah Mintz is really fired up at ACC Media Day saying he's angry and wants to get back. So I think the mood is, you know, these guys are really determined. They're optimistic. They want to fight. They want to win games, and they're going to be excited to do so under a new style. I think that's the general sense and the general feel around the team.
You mentioned Cuff on the Steve is old front. I can distinctly confirm that his dad did play against Syracuse, so he knows what Syracuse used to be.
Yeah, he talked about that as well. He said his dad, I don't know if he was matched up with Carmelo specifically or whether he was just speaking about the team in general, but Kyle Kupp Sr. had told his son that, yeah, just could not stop Melo. There was nothing that could be done.
Now, was it as weird as seeing Preston Shumpert's kids play for Damon?
A little bit, yeah, just because I have – my, like, earliest memories of Syracuse basketball are Preston Shumpert hitting threes. So to think that, yeah, along the Steve is old category, you hear guys say this that have been around for a while, and I'm just like, yeah, man, I'm you know, I'm in my 30s now, too. I'm getting a little bit older. So,
if Cuff's dad played against Melo, he's the same age as me.
Yeah.
Because I'm the same age as Melo. So apparently I could have a kid in college right now.
Yeah.
You know, we keep on talking basketball talk. We might as well continue it because you brought up Melo, and that's going to be that's something we touched on a little bit when this all first started on coming up earlier this month with Keon making his official visit to Syracuse earlier this month. Obviously the expectations aren't sky high as they were for when Melo initially joined the program. What's your general feel? Is it cool? Is it expectation driven? What's your general feel on Keon Anthony maybe potentially joining the Orange in the future?
Yeah, it's cool. You know, I don't have any special insight. I haven't like poked around or nobody's told me anything. So I don't know if he's going to come to Syracuse or not. You know, you talk about like the legacy and what Carmelo did, and I'm sure for him personally, like visiting the building that your dad donated and has his name on has to be pretty surreal for both of them, for father and for son. You know, I can imagine that there would be a certain gravity around that and a realization of like, my dad did this here. could that be inspiring? Yes. Could it be pressure? Yeah, it could be that too. So if he did decide to go elsewhere, I think Syracuse fans could try to be understanding about that, just because if he does come to Syracuse, there's almost nowhere to go but down. You're going to be compared to your father every game. And we've seen it can be difficult with legacy kids. But, you know, they've done pretty well too. Andy Routins, Buddy Boeheim, you know, there have been those stories as well that those guys are in their spots. So,
hey, we got him back this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
A returning legacy.
Yeah. But yeah, for Keon, you know, I think it's cool. And, you know, he does have a relationship with Mike Woodson, who was the head coach of the Knicks when Melo was on the Knicks. So that could play a factor as well. But yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it's cool. Eat it up. You know, Syracuse is obviously, when you think of Carmelo, you think of Syracuse. And, you know, for Keon to be able to kind of put on the jersey and do the recruiting visit and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, I think it's cool.
It's only Indiana.
That's I think Syracuse fans from a certain vintage would have a tough time with him going to Indiana. First they took 87, and then you take our we had our title, and then you've taken this kid. Come on now, you can't be doing that.
That would hurt a lot of.
I don't know if our home field deal would last through it.
No. Bonner is sure making a slam T-shirt about like something mellow wise.
Yeah.
If that if that happens, let's pray it doesn't.
Well, put it that way. Yeah. One more thing before we get off of basketball, because if you're still hanging around and interested in basketball, I think you may be hearing more and more of it around the Syracuse podcast feed here on Fans for Sports Nation Network. Jeez, Andy's got me on the fans.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does it all the time.
But yeah, James.
Yeah, that's right. So we're going to be starting a basketball specific pod. I'm going to call it a Syracuse basketball podcast. Points for originality there. But yeah, that'll be coming to you soon. We've been kind of having this in the works for a while with Noons. Just wanting to get a podcast together just specifically for basketball. Obviously, the interest is there. Syracuse fans are really passionate about their basketball. So we'll be building that out. There'll be more to come, but yeah, I'll be the host and you know, stay tuned for that. We'll be launching more and we'll have more information on that soon.
Don't worry. The name is still just as original as Duke Basketball Report. Shout out to our friends at Duke Basketball Report.
Duke Basketball Report. Yeah.
Love those guys. They do a great job, but it is a very generic name.
Yeah. Good for us, yeah.
And for anyone who's listening, if you subscribe to this feed, you will also get James's pods pushed on this feed. So you should be in good shape there.
Can I play the role of Tyler's from Spartansburg on that pod?
Absolutely. Why would you?
Perfect.
That's great.
Well, I'll just be Dave from Manlius then.
Scooter in Jamesville.
There you go.
Hey, Jim in Fayetteville has some ideas about this Syracuse team. Let me tell you.
You got more zone.
Indeed, yeah. Indeed. All right. Before we wrap up the pod, let's quickly touch on what happened earlier today. This is the Steve and Christian talk about soccer for a little bit. Hey, Pens. Yes.
Yeah, so if anybody missed it, Syracuse did not win a game today, but they advanced. Syracuse drew 1-1 with the Virginia Cavaliers, the number 3 seeded Virginia Cavaliers, Syracuse being the number 6 seed, which is mildly insane when the ACC is so good that the 3 seed is number 9 in the country and the 6 seed is the 22nd team. So Syracuse is now moving on to the semifinals of the ACC tournament. They'll be hosting the North Carolina Tar Heels on Wednesday at, I believe, 6:30. So at SU Soccer Stadium. So definitely get up there and check that out. Should be quite the matchup. Christian, were you able to catch the entirety of the game or just?
I didn't catch the entirety. I caught like the last half of it. Okay. So Syracuse definitely the aggressor in the second half, but the Virginia keeper just made wonder save after wonder save.
Yeah, he was literally standing on his head for most of the game. I believe he finished with 13 saves. Syracuse had 14 shots on goal. He saved 13 of them, which is stupid. to put it on the flip side, Virginia in regulation had one shot on goal and one goal. Syracuse had 14 shots on goal, one goal. Soccer is a weird sport, people.
As I've been raving about lately, expected goals can really drive you nuts.
Yes.
As the newest football manager player in the realm.
Yeah, XG can really take your brain and put it for a mm-hmm. loop. But either way, they ended up getting it done. Virginia basically in pens their keeper stonewalled Lorenzo Baselli to open it, and then could not handle any slow penalties, any hesitation whatsoever, it seemed, because Cuse ran the table after that. Virginia put one high and then doinked one off the post that gave them the opening to seal the deal, and Syracuse is advancing. So awesome to see. If you have a chance to look at the Mateo Levesque goal, really was a goal. Thing of beauty.
Really good goal.
Beautiful layoff from Lorenzo Baselli. There was also a Daniel Diaz Bonilla rocket that I don't know how the hell the UVA keeper kept out. But
yeah, his last save was just nuts.
Mm-hmm. So either way, they're surviving and advancing. Pretty much a lock for the NCAAs now at this point. It's just a matter of seeding. And yeah, I would say get out and, you know, support them at the SU Soccer Stadium on Wednesday.
Go out and support the soccer team. Enjoy some dome dogs in the dome when Syracuse plays. Just in general in basketball, I'm very excited to get the return of the Zuba dome dog reviews. That's really the highlight of basketball season.
So you gotta get the dome dogs and get the sauerkraut in there or something. I don't know. Hopefully we don't have to do that as much this year. That was a COVID indulgence.
All you have to really do is just wait for James's Big J spread reviews. That's what we're really here for.
That's right. Yeah, Tommy Hogan and I used to be on that. I think Jordan Capozzi at ESPN Radio Syracuse is kind of taking that over during the football season. So good for him. Yeah, we'll have to do more dome spread analysis there.
Really, just the most important part of any basketball season, which kicks off on Monday or tips off on Monday. Syracuse soccer.
If it kicks off, we've got some serious problems.
Yeah, we have someone who is definitely not required, not qualified to take the tip if they are kicking off. All right, I'm excited for the Syracuse basketball season. Steve, for the first time in like 10 years, is excited for Syracuse basketball.
I've mentioned this multiple times. It's probably the first time in at least 6 years. Like, even through some of those late Final Four runs and stupid postseason runs, I was like, this is lipstick on a pig. And I just felt like it was a sinking ship. And I love Jim Boeheim for everything he did. And I feel like, yeah, whatever. We've been down this road too many times, and I really want to see what Red can do with this squad.
It's going to be fun. So,
yeah.
So tune in to on Monday. James, where can people find you if they want to follow along with your analysis of the Syracuse basketball season?
Noonsmagician.com. I don't even know if we're still doing Twitter or X or if that even matters. I'm over on Blue Sky. There's the crowd over there is marginal at best. So I don't know, wherever we do the thing, on the socials, whatever. But yeah, just follow along on newsmagician.com.
Yeah, follow along on the site. Stay tuned for James's podcast. I'm sure that, you know, myself, Dom as well, Kevin, maybe even Steve and Andy, if they're feeling like it, will hop on to the basketball reports as well to give our thoughts on what's been happening during the basketball season as it goes along. It's a very exciting season, going to be tipping off with Red Autry at the helm. And we enjoy all of you for tuning along, and thank all of you for joining us tonight on the pod. If you're watching on the live streams, thank you as well for following along Sundays at 8 p.m. on Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter. Make sure you like, drop a follow or subscribe. If you're listening on your podcast platform of choice, be sure to rate, review, subscribe, comment, so that we can trick the algorithm into expanding the good old Ottoman Empire. One final shout out to our sponsors, Home Field Apparel. Use the code NUNES23, NUNES23, for 10% off at checkout. For James and Steve, I'm Christian Guzman, and we say, go Orange.
Go Orange.